You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Tour de France, in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today we are in Perragude.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
And Francois Thomazeau.
Hello, Richard.
That might be, is that Rob Hatch, pronunciation police? Anticipating some dodgy pronunciations tonight.
I think you said Lionel Burney quite well there, Richard. Quite well.
Thank you. Well, where are we, Lionel?
We're in Perragude, in the Pyrenees. The mist has really rolled in the last hour or so since the race finished.
The Haar. That's what we call it in Edinburgh, the Haar.
It's chilly. What was a beautiful view behind us earlier on this afternoon when the sun was shining is now... Well, it's now
gone.
Completely gone. Yeah.
So we've got to find the car, probably.
We've got to finish this podcast while we can still see each other.
Yeah.
That's the challenge.
Well, as long as we can hear each other, that's all that actually matters. That might actually be preferable. Tale of the etap, please, Lionel, because it was a bit of a belter and we want to get on talking about it.
We do. Well, I'll keep it brief because really all the action was in the last, 800 metres?
300.
Well, kicked off by George Bennett, but
we'll
that.
We'll come to him.
Yeah, it was stage 12 from Pau to Perragude, 214.5 kilometres. The early break that went clear had 12 riders in it, including Marcel Kittel and Michael Matthews, Thomas de Gendt and Steve Cummings. Steve Cummings was the most combative rider of the day.
Combative?
Combative.
Where's
yeah.
the pronunciation?
Aggressive, you here? Meant.
You've just made up a word.
Combative.
Combative.
Steve Cummings was the most combative rider of the day. He was away on his own for quite a long time from the top of the Port de Balès, and he was caught with 3 kilometres of the Périssaud still to go. Team Sky were really in control of the stage. As a team, they looked fantastic pretty much all day. They looked like nothing was going to escape their grasp. Even when Mikkel Nieve and Chris Froome ran off the road on a roundabout at the bottom of the Périssaud, and Fabio Aru also followed Froome. The climb of the Périssaud and then the ramp up here to Perragude was, they took turns. Mikhail Kwiatkowski was first, and then Mikkel Nieve, and then Mikkel Landa in the final 3-4 kilometres. I mean, he looked like he was out on a club ride with some juniors.
He
really.
Literally, the first time he opened his mouth all day was to shout at Nicola Portal after
we'll
the stage.
We'll come to that in a minute. They were obviously frightened by how steep this final ramp up here
I
was.
I walked up it. You know, we parked the car very far down from the press room, and so the shortest way was to take this ramp, to walk up this ramp to get to the press center, which is a tent. And actually, I can tell you, I walked up there in the sun. I just walked. I didn't ride it. I was absolutely shattered crossing the line. So I can imagine these guys, you know, it's amazing.
It'll be no surprise to our listeners that I took the long way round, which was less steep.
And I biked up on my Brompton.
You did. As I said, it was the Kiwi, George Bennett, of Team Lotto NL Jumbo, who made a very bold and probably slightly foolhardy attempt to... Well, he wasn't going to... I mean, that would have been superhuman if he'd managed to bring that in from there.
Yeah, but hear from him. I don't know if he recced it. I don't know if he knew about just how steep it was. But he's riding into the top 10 overall. And as somebody pointed out on Twitter, he was... in danger of riding Alain Zubeldia, you know, which for a quite young rider still fair enough, you know, and that to be in that company, you imagine he'd have been happy enough. So to have a go, I thought was great.
It was a fantastic effort, but Mikkel Landa rode him down as well. Then Fabio Aru kind of zigzagged his way up the steepest part of that ramp, and that was when Chris Froome started to look like he was in a little bit of trouble. But it was Romain Bardet of AG2R who won the stage, his third Tour de France stage win after winning at Saint-Jean-de-Maurienne 2 years ago and at Mont Blanc last year. Rigoberto Urán was second, Fabio Aru third. They got the time bonuses of 10, 6 and 4 seconds. Mikel Landa was fifth, just behind Aru, but crucially ahead of his Team Sky leader, Chris Froome, who lost 22 seconds to Bardet in the blink of an eye, really. After the stage, George Bennett and Rigoberto Urán were both penalised 20 seconds for illegal feeds for taking bottles from spectators on the roadside. Bennett did that with 6.5 kilometres to go, or thereabouts. Urán did that with 5 kilometres to go. There's also been a suggestion and some video evidence emerging to suggest that Bardet did the same.
He denied it, but I suppose the commissaires will decide soon enough whether it's the case or not.
So the big news really is that Romain Bardet's won the stage. Fabio Aru is now in the yellow jersey by just 6 seconds from Chris Froome. Urán, with his time bonus and the time he gained a little bit on the line, but then taking into account the penalty, he's still fourth at 55 seconds. Jakob Fuglsang of Astana lost 27 minutes because of his injuries to his wrist and his elbow. The other jerseys all stay the same. Marcel Kittel is in green. Warren Barguil is in the polka dots. Simon Yates is in white. And now, really, as Chris Froome said this evening, the race is really on. And tomorrow's stage, 100 kilometres from Saint-Girons to Foix, over 3 first category climbs. It's going to be very interesting to see how everybody responds on what will be fast, we imagine, and explosive.
It's going to be fantastic tomorrow, we think. We've been looking forward to this stage anyway. And it's difficult to know. I mean, where do we start? I had a chat with Brian Holm at the finish after speaking to Dan Martin. We'll hear from him in a moment. Brian Holm couldn't understand Team Sky's tactics, especially the fact they rode so hard to keep the break. Did go out a little bit, 6 or 7 minutes today, but you know they were always going to catch them and set up that finish that was for the win, and that just they rode hard. They used a lot of their guys up, you know, with this hard stage tomorrow. The likes of Kwiatkowski did a power of work again today. Luke Rowe did an awful lot of work today as well. Nieve, Landa, you know, those guys are going to perhaps feel it tomorrow. Yeah. And
Nicolas Porta explained that actually at the start, Chris Froome said he was feeling very well. He had good legs and he wanted to go for the stage win. So that's why they actually rode all day hoping for Froome to win the stage. And even this morning at the buses, I was talking to lots of directeurs sportifs. Most of them were predicting a stage win by Chris Froome. And even a couple of them told me he's going to kill the tour today. And, well, you know, the good news, in a way, for the public, not for Chris Froome, obviously, is that in previous tours and in previous tour victories, usually in that first kind of finish, Chris Froome was always winning it, and, you know, building a solid gap, and the tour was, like, over. It's not the case this time. He didn't win the Planche des Belles Filles, Aru won. He didn't win here, Bardet won. There is two main rivals in GC. We predicted an open race at the start of the tour. I never expected, to be honest, the tour to be as open as it is now.
Well, let's hear from Chris Froome and Nicolas Portal, Froome's Team Sky sports director. They were speaking at the finish.
I had a bad moment there at the end. No excuses. I just didn't have the legs there on the final kick. I can only say congrats to Bardet for winning the stage and Fabio Ruud for taking the jersey. It's certainly going to be a big fight now all the way to Paris.
Well, today the stage was trying to, you know, first to control, make sure we're not going to be on the position where we need to ride full gas all the day. Obviously, we knew that the last kick will be really decisive. And as long as everything was going well, obviously everything was going well. And just at the end, we just everybody did a good job, really good job. Until Mikel at the end, you know, he didn't know like Chris was dropped, and he obviously is better. He tried to make the bonif. And so it's how it is. We need to say, okay, maybe he ran out of the legs a little bit. It is how it is. Chapeau for Bardet because it was a nice stage. Yeah.
Disappointed with losing the yellow jersey?
Yeah, always. You know, when you're losing a bit of time, and especially like this. But you know, it's just 8 seconds, so it's not the end of the world. It's still a lot of tight, and it's like I think it's exactly like what expect. You know, I saw to make a race like this quite open. And if we need to see the positive way on this, it's like tomorrow has this, we're not going to ride, and it's pretty hard tomorrow. You know, 100K, it's going to be fast. So let's see the positive of that.
It was interesting, those final few kilometres, because Mikel Landa was not only the strongest rider in Team Sky, but arguably the strongest rider in that group. And we heard that he told Spanish radio that he felt he could win the stage. There was a slight theatrics caught on Eurosport and other broadcasters' cameras of Landa gesticulating to Nicolas Portal after the finish. You know, somebody said on Twitter perhaps they should leave that to, you know, the discussions to happen behind closed doors inside the bus. But I think that was exactly the point. Landa was making his feelings known. It's ironic, really, because this climb, although not quite the same finish, this is where Chris Froome almost dropped Bradley Wiggins in 2012 when Wiggins was in the yellow jersey.
It's a fascinating situation, isn't it, now, given that history? And the fact that Landa is reportedly off to Movistar next year, you know, that it was always a bit of a risk bringing him here for that reason. I felt that what Sky demand is absolute loyalty to one leader. You can see here a rider like Kwiatkowski absolutely turning himself inside out. This former world champion, a guy who's also finished quite high up overall the Tour de France.
The question is, I mean, I don't want to raise arguments that shouldn't be raised, but how come Mikel Landa was not the leader in the Giro? And how come he was not the leader here? If you look at what he's been doing on both tours, when he stages in the Giro, should have won maybe the stage today. As you said, it's now become a habit in Perigueux that the best Team Sky rider is not the one that's protected. So, and it's another very, very, astonishing factor in the case of Landa. All the riders coming from the Giro are nowhere to be seen. Nairo Quintana had collapsed on Pierre Sourde, the last climb. Thibaut Pinot, nobody knows he's on the tour. All these guys who fought for victory in the Giro are nowhere to be seen. And Landa is fresh as a baby.
Landa didn't, of course, fight for GC on the Giro. And, you know, perhaps that is that he did win. Did he win two stages in the end?
He won two stages. Yeah.
That perhaps is the thing that has allowed him to come here in such great form. I mean, he looked at the Giro. Had he not suffered that crash on the stage of Blockhouse, that he would have been a contender, perhaps a winner.
Yeah, but he's six overall now. You know,
but let's not forget. Yes, seventh, he is up there overall, seventh overall, and he looked by far Sky's strongest rider today, particularly considering all that work he did in the final stage of the climb. But he is 2 minutes 55 down, and that on this course is, you know, that's a big, you know, it's a chasm really that he's got to try and bridge. And he's not going to get the opportunity
to do so.
I mean, you know, his descent this evening, if that's what it was, you know, perhaps was, you know, he could have gone for the stage win and hoovered up a bit of that time bonus and denied one of the others the few crucial seconds. That's, I mean, it wasn't
that
necessarily
the
smartest.
That may have been the point he was making.
Yeah. It wasn't necessarily
you
the smartest
you
way
can
to
can understand,
ride.
Again, why he's leaving for Movistar. And it raises another problem. Every time Team Sky hire a guy like Mikel Landa or Leopold Koenig or other guys like this, you know, who are talented climbers to help one of their leaders, they usually don't stay because, I mean, you know, they're in a way, it's a little bit of a waste for Landa. I'm sure the money was good. But, you know, obviously, next year, Movistar, Valverde is getting older. Quintana is maybe not, you know, showing all the sheer talent we expected him to have. Landa could be a real leader in Movistar next year, especially the next Vuelta. They don't have a leader, you know.
He's got that. He's got the head for it as well. There's an edge to Landa that some of his fellow Basques don't have. A lot of the Basque riders, they make great teammates. A lot of them, they're selfless, humble sort of people. Mikel Nieve being a classic example of that.
But the thing is, I mean, you know, Landa's not really the story for Team Sky today, is he? You know, the question is, how serious was that, you know, faltering steps from Chris Froome at the finish? You know, he said he didn't have the legs when it really mattered there at the end.
I was curious about whether how much we should read into really such an unusual finish like that, so steep, that might not be the sort of finish that suits Froome. It was one of the questions I asked Dan Martin at the finish. Dan Martin, who had that terrible crash, of course, into Chambéry, and is riding incredibly well considering that he came off with Richie Port. He was sixth on the stage and he is fifth overall, still right in amongst it. And he was quite talkative at the end. Here he is.
Yeah, well, I recanted because I live just over the border here, you know, in Mandorah. So I knew what to expect and that was a huge advantage all day. And And yeah, everybody's just exhausted at the end. I mean, we've done so many kilometres so far this race. I mean, it might be flat stages, but it's still time on the bike. And it's, yeah, I think, as Patrick just says, every day somebody's going to get hit by the hammer, you know, and it's just going to be an elimination race. But we all kind of, I think everybody knew the last kilometre there was going to be really hard. And as you see, you could have lost 30 seconds, 40 seconds at last 300 metres, you know, so it was really... Yeah, so me, I mean, I was suffering all day, you know, from the first kilometre, I was saying my legs was empty, I had a really bad day, and I expected to lose, like, half an hour, lose everything, so I'm really happy. I mean, this morning, the objective was just to ride conservatively and try and hang on, and, yeah, to get a result like that today, I mean, I could barely even get out of the saddle, you know. The only times I could get out of the saddle was when it was going easy and I could stretch, you know. I don't have any power out of the saddle to sprint, and normally that would be a great finish for me. I rode the final perfectly and then went to go, and just, I think you can see, normally I'd sprint all the way up to the finish line, and I just didn't have anything. My back's really bad from the crash, you know, so. But we'll take it day by day. That's a really hard stage out the way, and hopefully try and get through tomorrow, and we can be a bit more aggressive in the Alps. It's definitely not a finish for Chris, and you don't know how that crash he had with 15k to go, like, he was feeling really good. I talked to him and he was feeling really good up until then, and they were really going for the stage, you know, so it's the crash might have taken out of him, or he might just have a bad day or whatever, you know. It's not, it's very, very close, and everybody said before the start it's going to be the closest tour, but also, I mean, Fabio needs more time than Chris than that in his last time trial, so it's still going to be a very open race, you know.
Yeah. Is there a danger, Dan, that we read too much into that, because it was such a hard finish? Froome did seem to crack a bit, but should we be wary of reading too much into that?
Yeah, they've got a history of bouncing back, you know, so it's definitely. I mean, I think Chris has also definitely got that last time trial in the back of his mind as well, and he doesn't need to be in yellow all the way to, he probably quite enjoys not having it. all the attention he gets from it, you know, so yeah, they're going to definitely I think it's going to be a very aggressive race, and obviously now we don't have, like, Astana have lost a couple of guys as well, I think, so yeah, you don't have the might of Sky control in the race, and it might mean that Sky are more aggressive, at least a more open race, you know, who knows.
Hi, I'm Joey Early. I'm the cafe manager in the Rafa Boulder Clubhouse, and you are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa.
The Rafa Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kit and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Thank you very much indeed to Rafa, our main sponsor, and a reminder that our Rafa Cycling Podcast Rafa clothing is now for sale. There's a lovely cycling jersey, a cap and a t-shirt, and they're all available at rafa.cc or through the shop button on our website, thecyclingpodcast.com. And of course, every week at the Tour de France, we present one rider with a Pedaleur de Charme t-shirt. Last week it was Taylor Finney. They were very hot competition. I actually released a long list for this week's Pedaleur de Charme. A couple of omissions in the end that stoking a bit of controversy, especially Bodnar and Lilian Calmejean just narrowly missed out. But the final shortlist is Warren Barguil, Mikhail Kwiatkowski, Rigoberta Urán and Juan Ofredo. And it opened about an hour ago, 350 votes already. Urán leads with 35%, but it's very, very close. Can we have a second Cannondale rider in a row?
Well, that's the question. Has one team kept the Pedaleur de Charme jersey through the whole of the tour before? It's never been
done. It's never been done. That's never been done in the history of the competition. But you've got a good 20 hours or so left to cast your votes, so please do. And we will present Pedaleur de Charme jersey to one of those riders in the next few days.
Well, the yellow jersey won't be held by one team all the way from start to finish either, will it? Because Team Sky have lost the jersey. It's not quite unprecedented. I think they lost the jersey to Tony Martin 1 year. I think, was that 2015? But they've never lost a jersey in a critical mountain stage when they've been in yellow. And so now we have the situation where Fabio Aru of Astana has a very slender lead. They've, of course, lost Jakob Fuglsang from a high overall position. And by tomorrow morning, we may well find out that the Dane is lost from the Tour de France as well, because when he came over the line and got back to the Astana bus, he looked in a really bad way. 27 minutes lost today, and he finished with four of his Astana teammates, Michael Valgren, Andre Zaitz, Andre Grifko, and Dmitry Gustiev. Now, that means those guys have had a fairly comfortable day, I guess, shepherding Fuglsang to the finish. They haven't been pushing on at the sharp end like Sky have, but Fabio Aru is going to need those teammates tomorrow. And I think the first question is, will Astana ride the way that the yellow jersey team rides, and will they try to control everything? Or, because the gap's so small, will the onus still fall a little bit on Team Sky? That's going to be the fascinating thing about tomorrow's stage.
They've only got 100k's like to think about it, and it might be a little bit too long if they don't decide what to do. Vinokurov was at the buses, and he had this tendency to say, well, you know, we have a very weak team, we can't take the race under our helm, it's not our job to do that, we're not Team Sky, blah, blah, blah. Hinting that they might not do the job tomorrow. And if so, will Team Sky take over the reins as they do all the time? I really don't see any reason why not, actually, because can really Team Sky race otherwise? Do they know how to race without leading the bunch? I'm not sure, especially on a day like this.
Put Landa in a break. Take Landa out the road early.
Well, he's an ex-Astana man, isn't he? I mean, maybe he's the enemy within for Team Sky. Who knows? No, that's a bit much. But it's always great to see Vinokurov with such a smile on his face.
Stop staring, Landa. Vinokurov's celebrating an anniversary.
He is. It's 10 years since he was booted out of the Tour de France he won a time trial at Albi with two knees so badly bashed up that he could barely walk when he was off the bike, and yet he could time trial at 55 kilometres an hour. I only exaggerate slightly.
When you think that some guys are, you know, not welcome on the Tour de France for doping reasons. I mean, they were never actually caught for a dope test. And others who have been caught for a dope test on the Tour de France, you know, are at the buses, are at the start, and have been for quite a few years.
Vinokurov, where the stage started today, Poe, that's where we heard, and where Vinokurov was booted off the race for a blood transfusion. I always remember his father was here, and one of the theories was that his father had appeared, and one of the theories was that he'd taken blood from his father. It's all very ghoulish, and he said, this is nonsense. If I'd taken a blood transfusion from my father, I'd have tested positive for vodka.
Yeah, it was the best quote of the tour.
Best quote ever from Vinokurov, isn't it?
Yeah, it was.
So, yeah, Fabio Aru is in yellow, looking obviously very, very good. It's all to play for, isn't it? I think tomorrow the great... We've always been looking forward to this super short stage, expecting Alberto Contador to light a firework underneath it. It doesn't look in the form that he's in that he'll be capable of that. But I think we can expect a lot of excitement.
It's interesting you said, you know, it's difficult to know how much to read into that final steep bit right at the end today. I mean, we had a little bit of feedback from listeners saying that, you know, our coverage of the two dullest days in tour history yesterday and the day before, we didn't exactly sugarcoat it, did we? We were fairly honest that they weren't firecracker races, and it wasn't a firecracker of a race today either.
But it was heading to be quite a dull day, wasn't it,
well,
until the
I
end?
I think if you take out Fuglsang and Quintana, eight of the top 10 overall were just riding up the mountain in a group being led by Team Sky.
Well, in that case, can I mention George Bennett, who I spoke to at the end with a few others. We'll hear from him in a second. I've been very, very impressed with him. I mean, he rode the Tour of California, won the Tour of California, I should say. He features actually in our Kilometre Zero tomorrow, which is about the four Kiwis in the race. There are more New Zealanders in the race than there are Americans this year, incredibly. He features in that quite a lot. He's an interesting guy. Funny guy. Always got time at the finish to speak to journalists. And
he's on my list for a third week, Pinard de Charme, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I think he may be, if he holds on to this, I mean, he's ninth, you know, a New Zealander has never finished, 18th is the best finish by a New Zealander, so I think he's getting a bit of attention back home, and it's a real coming of age sort of year for him. He's a bit of a breath of fresh air, I think, and I was very, very impressed by the attack that he launched. As I said earlier, I'm not sure that he knew the finish. But that was good to give it a go, because he was riding in the company of the yellow jersey, all the main favourites, and he wasn't content to just hold that position. He actually did something quite aggressive that led to all the other attacks, you know, so good on him. Here he is at the finish.
I was definitely surprised when I came around the corner and I saw the wall. I mean, yeah, I probably would have ridden that differently. But yeah, I was there and I had at that moment really good legs, but man, it's just insane. That last 200 metres seemed to last a lifetime. If I keep it on two wheels and a couple of other guys don't, and it was sickness or whatever, you know, anything can happen, but top five, it's so many guys, so strong, and I just can't have anything bad, and actually I'm going to need to be better than I am to get in the top five, because the top five guys are really another level. They looked so strong all day, and I thought I heard Froomey on the radio telling them to ride faster, and I wanted to ride up and punch him in the leg and say, bugger off, keep it the speed. But yeah, he just pulled the parachute, and not as bad as me, I guess. But yeah, I mean, that was a crazy, crazy stage. Like, I don't know what it looked like on TV, but it was full gas in the peloton. Absolutely full gas the last 70k. I think just eat as much as I can, put the feet up, listen to some good music, and do some meditation or something and try and forget about today. And I don't know, just tomorrow is going to be something special, I think. 100k, fireworks, for sure. Contador, do something ridiculous, maybe even Quintana, maybe even Sky. Stay tuned.
You're absolutely right, Richard. George Bennett kicked it off, and it was an absolutely gripping final 800 metres and a particularly gripping final 300 metres. And I think on reflection, you know, an hour before the finish of the stage, thinking, well, what's going to happen here? Is anything going to happen? But when it boiled down to that sort of intense excitement at the end, it was well worth the wait, I think. And, you know, it hasn't completely changed the course of the race. Chris Froome hasn't been able to, you know, gain any time. Well, he hasn't gained any time. He's lost time. He's lost the jersey, of course. But nobody has managed to get far enough ahead. So it's still all to play for. And tomorrow is, you know, the last chance again before we get into the Alps.
But the interesting thing is that with that type of finales and this one and the one where La Planche des Belles Filles, they do suit Chris Froome a little bit, but maybe not as much as, you know, steeper, longer hills. And the result is not only that he seems on the wane, we'll never know if that's the case. Maybe he's on the decline already or not. But the interesting thing is that in the past tours, nobody seemed to want to attack Froome at any stage, or nobody was in a position or capable of attacking Froome. Today, you had George Bennett attacking, Mikel Landa attacked. Well, he was not attacking Froome, but he did attack. And then in the end, Romain Bardet surged and added this great victory. So, you know, you had the impression in the past, and Fabio Aru attacked at La Planche des Belles Filles. So in the past, we had the impression that everybody was content with letting Froome win the Tour and, you know, get the second, third place laurels. And it's changed, you know. These days, they try that chance. They're going for it. Dan Martin also is always been very aggressive in the finishes. So these guys really believe there's a chance for them not only to win stages, but maybe to try and topple the king.
I think that's the big takeaway from today. There's a crack there. There's a sign of weakness, you know, where he misjudged it on La Planche des Belles Filles. Like, he was as good as anybody on that hard stage into Chambéry. Today was really the first crack, the first chink of light, and what that could do for the others' confidence, for the aggression that they show, that sets up a really good race. As we must remember that, as Dan Martin said, that time trial on the penultimate day into Marseille really suits Froome down to the ground, and he's got a bit to play with there in terms of time. If that was tomorrow, you would still put him as an outstanding favourite to win the Tour.
I should just say we've had to move back inside undercover because it's now raining up here, and the staff are now packing up around us. So if you hear a bit of crashing and banging, that's what that is. We've also got a colleague from Colombian Radio. The unique style of Colombian radio broadcasting going on in the background. But we'll try and keep focused. I think the thing about Team Sky, Rich, you made a point when we were talking just after the stage. The team is strong. But now there is a little bit of a question mark over Chris Froome.
Well, there's no point in having the strongest team if you don't have the strongest leader. It's you know, it's almost when Chris Froome was the strongest as he was last year, having such a strong team, it was almost like a sledgehammer to crack a nut because they had the strongest rider anyway. Here, we don't know. I mean, we don't want to read too much into today's stage. It might prove to be a sort of aberration, an anomaly, but it looked today like he has certainly got the strongest team by a mile. Is he the strongest rider in the race?
It reminds me a little bit in the old days of the Onse team. They were always leading the bunch, by far the best team, four guys in the top 10 in the general classification, never won a tour. So the question now is, who is going to be the most cunning, the most clever, who will use the terrain best and the opportunities best to snatch 10, 15, 40 seconds, who knows, My impression, and I'm not saying it because he's French and because he won the stage today, but Romain Bardet has been riding very well since the start. Today, he was the one who attacked at the right time, at the right moment. He had checked the course with his family. He came with his family to check the course, before the Tour de France. Team director Stéphane Goubert told me he kind of tried to impregnate himself, of the course. So he really knew where to attack, and he actually not only checked Persaud. Everybody knows Persaud. He really walked up and down this steep little climb in the finish.
A bit like you, Francois.
So there you are.
A bit like you today.
Yeah, a bit like I did. But I mean, he probably did it better than I did. I was in a sweat, and the gendarmes were nearly taking me on a stretcher, so.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport.
So my name is Marco from Team Sky. I'm a carer. This tour I'm bus carer. Every day we keep the same musettes. It depends on the weather. If it's hot, we put some more SIS gels inside with electrolytes. Otherwise, we usually have two normal Go gels, two Go bars, one double espresso caffeine gel and one normal caffeine gel, and then we have rice cakes, two bottles and small Coke. They take the same, so that's why we keep everything like this inside, so if someone doesn't like something, he can throw it away. After all these years, it's like going to office and do your job, so now it's like daily job, and it's not so hard anymore. But yeah, sometimes it's quite stressful, especially in Tour or like cobbled classics where there's a lot of spectators standing on your way in front of you, and then riders need to see you as well, so sometimes it's quite dangerous. That's why there's also a lot of crashes in feed zones. It's quite a dangerous spot to be. Yeah, so usually we have agreement just before races. They say, okay, we want you guys to send last team, or we want you guys to send first team, so they exactly know where we're gonna be. And then we also have we communicate with our DSs, and they tell them on the radio, okay, they're gonna be last team and this team is in front, so when they see this team, okay, they move on the right. And usually we try to find, if it's possible, we try to fight uphill where they go slower, so they don't really need to break. Actually, on stage one or stage two, after time trial, we had white jerseys, yellow jersey, and green jersey, and yellow helmet. So it was quite... you need to memorize everything. And it happened before when some rider changed the jersey, like for leader or point jersey in some other races, that we missed him. Or didn't want to give him musette. Like, well, what do you want to do with our musette?
Alyssa Morahan, Team Cannondale Jetpack. The musette will have two bottles in it. Generally, we put two bottles of mix, of electrolyte mix, because it's additional calories, and sometimes it's hard to drink enough, so get the extra calories in. Then we also put in two different kinds of bars, some gels, and then a rice cake goes in to top it off. And generally, we put in a small can of Coke, so a little treat. In the feed zone, everybody gets the same thing. If there's somebody who is, lactose intolerant, tries to stay, we try and make sure that all the bags are then the same. unless we are lucky enough to have three people in a feed zone and have one person who can say, okay, I have the bag for Pierre. You know, he needs something different today. Generally, there's just not a way to have it set so that they get it in the feed zone. If someone has to have special bottles, we usually put them in the car with their name on them. And they know that if they absolutely have to have that, they just have to drop back to the car. Or someone can pick it up while they're back there, but it's labeled that way.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport. Fueled by science.
An interesting segment there, sponsored by our season-long supporters, Science in Sport, about how the riders fuel during the stage, grabbing their musettes in the feed zone, because at the end of the stage, both Rigoberto Urán and George Bennett were penalised 20 seconds for feeding in the final 20 kilometres of the stage, which you're not allowed to do. They've both been given a time penalty, and we will find out whether Romain Bardet is also going to get a time penalty.
Well, Kaylee Fretz, our colleague from Velo News, has just posted a video clip that shows it appears to show Bennett taking a bottle and then Bardet taking a bottle from literally the same family by the side of the road. But the interesting thing here is that an argument some people are making is that Bardet didn't appear to actually drink out of it.
No, he had to look at it. And
so what's the rule there? You know, if you touch it...
I don't know. To be honest, my impression is probably that you have to drink it. But what I know is that Romain Bardet denied it.
They've taken the bottle away to test for lip marks.
What I know is that Romain Bardet denied drinking from that bottle. But no doubt the race jury are always right, and I've proved since the start of the tour that the decisions are clear and
absolutely free from controversy.
It is one of the
they will decide.
It's very risky taking a drink from somebody at the side of the road. Cannondale Drapac initially were very confused by it. I was around their bus, and they were trying to find out where Urán had taken a bottle, because they were sure it wasn't anybody from the team. And most of the riders have it drilled into them not to drink a bottle handed up to them from the roadside, because you don't know what's in it. But apparently it was a Cannondale employee, an employee of the bike company, who handed up a bottle to Urán, maybe wearing a Cannondale jersey or something. I don't know. Who knows? It's costly for Urán, because Urán is fourth overall and at just 55 seconds. So losing 20 seconds is significant.
It is, yeah. And it's strange as well that Bardet and George Bennett should take a bottle from the same family. I mean, they're probably someone they know. I mean, we'll find out. I mean, it's in the you never know. In the long run, maybe in Paris, you know, there'll be 20 seconds missing for either of these guys. And all this because they picked a bottle from an unknown family, you know.
Well, what about Romain Bardet then? Because he was the stage winner, of course. You know, when he's won his stages before, in 2015, there was a kind of a long wait for him to get his opportunity. I think he won on the final Friday, and his overall chances had long gone at that point. Last year, you know, he was right in the thick of it. A real long shot to topple Chris Froome in the final few mountain stages in the Alps. But, you know, his stage win last year was impressive at Mont Blanc. He's obviously come here in great, great shape. That wasn't necessarily a climb that I could have seen him doing all that well on. I don't know whether that was one that I would have expected him to be the best on.
Well, me neither. But from what I said previously, if he came, you know, with family and everyone to check this final climb, it's obviously he had ambitions on it. My impression is that Bardet has prepared for this tour, you know, even better than ever. He's in great shape. He seems to know where to attack and when to attack. The other day in Chambéry, you know, he made his move at the right moment. You could tell he knew exactly when to go. And we were told, yeah, well, that's normal. It's training roads. The headquarters are in Chambéry and all that. But today, again, you know, he proved. And that's actually what his team director, Stéphane Goubert, was saying at the finish. He said it's really a real team victory, because we worked hard. We had checks. We prepared like we never prepared before. And the other interesting thing is that there was no like any kind of triumphalism. You know, they were not. Gubia was not like jumping around saying, "Oh, we won!" You know, the tourists won. No, really, you know, they maintain a very low key profile. Gubia even told me, you know, because here the little ramp. Get into the final part is actually a kind of heliport, you know, a airport, and he said, well, he had this quote. He said, well, you know, Romain took off today, but I hope he will land until tomorrow morning because we have another very very hard, intriguing stage. So you see, no real jubilation, no triumphalism, like Aru. I mean, they're all very cautious about this tour, which is very difficult to decipher. So, but my impression personally is that really Romain Bardet, I'm not saying he's come of age, but he's gone one step ahead, whereas Chris Froome is probably not as good as he used to be. So, once again, it makes up for a very exciting third week.
Well, the other thing is, I mean, Bardet is only 25 seconds down. There are, of course, time bonuses on every stage for the apart from the time trial. So 10 seconds available on the line. Tomorrow's the three first category climbs. The final one is the Mur de Peguer. Have I got that right?
The Mur de Peguer.
Peguer. Okay. And that is really, really steep. In the final few kilometres, 18%, 16%, a real ramp up to the top there. And then from the profile, I don't know the road, but from the profile, it looks like a long, kind of fairly gentle descent down into Foix, but could be an opportunity to sort of pile on the pressure again on the descent, or is it too far?
No, apparently Goubert was saying that the descent tomorrow shouldn't be a factor. But can you believe what team directors tell you? I don't know. Even if you are, you know, good friends with them. But so no, I guess tomorrow probably the uphill section will matter. There was an interesting little remark made by Goubert at the finish. He said that, you know, let's not rule out Chris Froome. He's not finished by at all, and he said that maybe that this little, you know, when he slid off the road with Mikel Nieve, he said maybe that little shot of adrenaline he had at that time, which was crucial, and the nerves that came afterwards, what was actually the little shot of adrenaline missing in the final part when he needed this kick to go for victory. Who knows?
Well, it's 26 or thereabouts kilometres from the top of the Mur de Peguer down to Foix, so you know we're going to see a lot of racing on that descent. It's going to be fascinating to see how they tackle this, because I always think back to the stage to Alpe d'Huez that Pierre Rolland won in 2011. That was the first of these really short mountain stages of the modern era. I know they, back in the day, in the 70s and 80s, they used to have short mountain stages. But it's as interesting to me to see how they race this tomorrow.
That was a humdinger, wasn't it? Contador was on the rampage. Cadel Evans was off his bike, remember?
That's
and
right.
Had there were all kinds of things going on in that stage. We'd kill for another one like that. I think the interesting thing is going to be the dynamics in that front group as well, because whether today was misleading or not, the others have got to have gained a little bit of encouragement from what happened to Froome today. And even all season, you know, we saw him at the Dauphiné crack as well.
Course,
he hasn't won a race this year. He doesn't seem to be the Chris Froome of last year or the year before.
A silly suggestion. Maybe his main goal this season is the Vuelta?
Well, who knows?
Who knows?
But there's blood in the water.
I have a little something I must say now, you know. Nobody speaks English in the AG2R team, but I managed, you know, just for the cycling podcast, to have Stéphane Goubert say a few words in English to us. Here is what he had to say.
Bon, Stéphane Goubert, what is the feeling today?
I love you.
Well, Francois, I think the feeling's mutual, no?
Quite the scoop there. I don't know what the equivalent of the pre-Jacques Gaudet is for podcasting. But Francois putting himself in the running there, I think, with that interview.
Well, I might be leaving the tour soon. His arrival, I mean,
arrival here for Ciro and his soul sister, Filippo Pozzato.
Getting people to tell him they love them and they love Francois. Well, there we are.
Shall we wrap things up tonight? We've got to get off this mountain. Any other business, Lionel?
Not so much. I mean, I was impressed with the way that Sunweb rode again today. Michael Matthews doing a lot of work.
But Kittel did too.
Trying to get green jersey points as well, because obviously Kittel was in that move. It's a long shot for him, I think, in the green jersey, but you just never know. Kittel might have a horrible day in the Alps or something might happen, so you can't give up the fight. But not only that, he was working there for Warren Barguil, who his teammate, who has the King of the Mountains jersey. And I've got the results here, because he did go over the top of one of the climbs in first place, I think, Matthews, didn't he?
I think it was second.
So, I mean, you know, Matthews has had a tough... yeah, he did. He went over the Col de Monte in first place. So, you know, really sort of giving his teammate a bit of a helping hand there. Barguil got a huge cheer as he came down from the podium and went through the crowds to his team bus. A really handsome-looking lead in the King of the Mountains competition. And, you know, a very stylish wearer of that jersey, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, he's seen it now, Pedal of the Sham competition, where he is. I'm not campaigning for anyone on this one, because I've made my point clear in this competition. I think I'd vote for Johan Ofredo, but Barguil was a little bit too short to be in the main battle today with the leaders, which maybe was a little bit disappointing, but in the same time, he had battled so hard in previous climbs to collect points. That's part of the problem when you decide to go for the polka dot. When you decide, okay, stage wins, I'll try my best, but now, you know, they can see me from afar. Same with the GC. That there is a time in the Tour de France, and it's around this time, when the polka dot becomes a competition in itself. That's the only goal you can go for, because nobody will let you win a stage, and nobody will let you, you know, make it back in a GC. So for Barguil, I think it's his only race now is to keep the jersey.
Okay, finally, chaps, predictions for tomorrow. Who is the stage that we think it could be exciting? Who or which team is going to make it exciting? Who's going to do what Contador did in 2011?
That's a very, very hard question. Barguil will probably attack again to defend his jersey. He might be one of to do that. It's very, very short for a breakaway to take place. My impression is Team Sky should control it, actually. And you know what? I see Aru winning the stage tomorrow.
I mean, I think AG2R have got to do what they did on the stage to Chambéry, at least try. They have got a strong team. And
very underrated, I think. They're really good. They've got some really good climbers who can do stuff in the early part of the stage.
Yep, why not? You know, just send men up all over the place. And Bardet go on the rampage. Bardet do tomorrow what Contador did. And
well, you know me, Rich. I don't do speculation. But what I can tell you is that I'm very much looking forward to getting to Foix, one of the several homes of Cassoulet, the rich bean dish, which has duck and goose and sausage in it. I'm looking forward to a hot plate of that, especially if it's cold like it is today. That would be very warming.
Yum, yum. Just before we go, I don't think we've mentioned Louis Menkes, but he rode extremely well today. He's riding steadily into a high overall position. He's fifth. He was fifth on the stage, and he is now up to 10th. He's 10th overall. Couple of under 23 riders in the top 10. Sam Yates, who is six, maybe a little bit out of reach. I did speak to Louis Menkes at the finish, actually, and he said that Adam had a few minutes on him. I said, you mean Simon? But easy to get those, easy to get them confused.
Not
quite a few minutes, but he's got about two and a half minutes on him. So it's going to be tough for him to get the white jersey. But Yates in six as well, riding a very very steady, consistent race.
Very, very lastly, because we have to wrap up, but we haven't really mentioned Alberto Contador, now very much looking like yesterday's man, unfortunately for him. And Nairo Quintana, well, we mentioned him earlier on, but any preposterous talk of trying to win the Giro and the Tour, well, obviously he didn't win the Giro, so it was never on the cards anyway, but riding a hard Giro, as you said, Francois, you know, that's really hampered him. And he's not a factor here at all, but, you know, if he loses a bit more time, maybe he can go for a stage win in the Alps.
surprised to see that, to be honest. But anyway, let's leave it there. Francois, thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.